for the introduction, and thanks. I'd like to thank the organizers, actually, for inviting me here, which is quite a nice surprise for me. When I was looking at the description of that workshop and the goals, the very first line of the description of the workshop is that the workshop will try to explore the interactions and the relation between search and knowledge. This is exactly what this talk is going to try to do. It's going to consider a fresh look at information extraction and knowledge acquisition, and the freshness of that would be that it's going to consider search queries rather than collections of documents as the source, as the input data for acquiring various types of knowledge. In this talk, we're going to focus on one particular kind of knowledge, which is class attributes. My name is Marius Pashka, and I'm in the research group at Google, in case you were wondering. We have a research group. It's kind of distributed like about everything that Google does is. I'm in the California location, actually at the headquarters in Mountain View, in the Bay Area. Our original motivation for this work was a larger project that we started in fact extraction. We're not obviously the first ones or the only ones trying to do this. By this, we mean acquiring a larger collection of facts from various sources of unstructured text. Traditionally, that source of unstructured text is, well, a collection of documents. For instance, a collection of news articles. This particular news article is kind of controversial. It's an older one. There is some sort of contention between Germany and Austria over the name of a very famous composer. But hidden somewhere in that article that talks, as I said, about sort of something else, well, there is a fact, which is that Mozart was born in 1756. Can we actually, there is a part here that is.
Yeah, that's the one that I can see that.
Have you had that before, or?
Every problem you can imagine with presenting we've had, but I'll go get it.
Is there something that you need for that? Is it the projector itself then?
It's usually the resolution.
It's a setting.
It's a setting. Yeah, it's better if I just don't
let's
pretend
say,
I know
let's
more
try something else.
No, but it's okay.
That's better.
So just threatening to get everything.
There are going to be some slides that I'm going to be using about the entire real estate, so it's important to see it. As I was saying, one particular fact, the fact that Mozart was born in some year, that is hidden within a document that talks about something else. The type of the documents range from news articles that are kind of clean through well about anything that you can imagine, some structured text. This piece of the document, this is actually a patent application. Again, it's a rather technical description of which you may or may not be interested, but there is a fact there that's kind of general purpose, which is that Apple Computer happens to be a company that we know about. It is headquartered in some place which is Cupertino, California. That shows that, as everyone knows, and this is actually the motivation of the work for many people here in the room, the web is actually a repository of implicitly encoded human knowledge. And that comes often in the form of unstructured text, which is the kind of the most difficult kind to process. Most difficult as compared to, say, semi-structured text, as compared to tables, HTML tables, where someone actually took the time and effort to encode something in the form of a table. There are rows, there are columns, there is some implicit semantic knowledge there. In the case of unstructured text, well, everything has to be derived from scratch. What has to be derived? Well, there are objects that are interconnected by relations. For instance, there is the fact that the capital of Australia is Canberra. Many of us know that already. The fact that Mozart was born in some place in some years, some of us know that already. But all of these can fit under what we could call general purpose knowledge, the general open domain knowledge rather than a closed domain. We're not talking about medical knowledge, we're not talking about knowledge that only some people specializing in a particular field might be aware of. What we'd like to do is to derive a large amount of these facts because they could enhance search results. That would be one of the applications for this kind of facts. When people submit queries such as when was Mozart born or Capital Australia, those could be actually fact-seeking questions. So one thing people can do, well, what the search engine can do is, well, return the usual, return a bunch of documents about of links with some snippets, and hopefully those snippets will contain the answer. If not, the result will be able to find the answer in there. Or it can return directly the result, the answer, if you know it. The capital of Australia is Canberra, if you already have the fact that you have pre-extracted. Another kind of queries that that could be processed this way would be sort of database-like queries. This would be a bit more difficult than the former. For instance, what companies are headquartered in Cupertino, to say. Well, if you already have a big database of facts, then you might have a listing there. Another kind of queries that might benefit from this is the named entity type of queries. These are the most frequent out of the three, because people will type this a lot. They're looking for various named entities, whether are companies, people, locations, and so on. Here, as one could think of alternative ways to display search results. You could provide, for instance, the most important facts that you know about. If you had a way to compute the relevance or the importance of the facts that you extracted beforehand, then you might display, let's say, the birthplace, and let's say the age, and let's say the most important achievements for Uma Thurman. Same thing for Mario Vargas Llosa, even though the two are one is an actor and the other one is a writer, but they are people, both of them. And then there are companies who would have headquarters. They might have stock symbols, share prices, CEOs, and so on. Which takes us to the next step in this big project, and actually takes us closer to this particular talk. Finding out what these important facts should be. How do we know that Apple Computer, how do we know that companies have a CEO, headquarters, a number of employees, and so on? This is precisely what you'd like to extract. You'd like to extract class attributes. For the class of companies, we'd like to find a list that would contain items like the CEO, headquarters, and so on. Same thing for writers. For aircraft models, for instance, we'd like to get wingspan, we'd like to get cruising altitude, and so on. Yes?
So these days, why wouldn't you just send somebody to Wikipedia for that kind of thing?
For what kind of thing?
For the kinds of basic information about an entity. Why wouldn't you just send them to the appropriate Wikipedia article instead of worrying about generating it automatically?
For you're talking about this particular
yes.
thing, or what about the class attributes?
I'm sorry.
Are you worried about? Are you talking about this particular thing, about this example, or about class attributes?
I'm talking about queries of that type.
Queries of that type.
Yeah.
This is already kind of happening.
Yeah.
So we're trying to see if we can do more than that. Sending users to Wikipedia is kind of done already. If you type
yeah.
Uma Thurman in Google, most likely.
Right.
You'll see the link to Wikipedia.
So
the top results.
What is the additional thing that you hope to
The additional thing
gain?
That you're gaining is that in Wikipedia, a lot of the information is not going to be well structured. And this is part of the experiments that we're not talking about here. In other words, Wikipedia does not explicitly tell you that for various classes you'd have these various attributes. For Uma Thurman, if you look at Wikipedia, you probably find the birthplace. You'll have a table, usually, on the right side. And that kind of information will be more easy to extract. But what's in unstructured text, that has to be derived explicitly, and that has not been done. I'm not sure if that answers the question very well. We have done more recent experiments in which, for sort of obvious classes, Wikipedia will have the information in structured form. But for many classes, it won't. So So trying to derive class attributes actually from things like Wikipedia doesn't work for for a lot of classes, because it won't have that information explicitly in structured form.
But I think what you're saying is that when you type this in, you add other bits of information that are connected to these classes, such that, like, if I typed in Uma Thurman, maybe all I really wanted to know is her birthplace and her most recent movie, and that was all the information I really wanted about Uma Thurman, rather than having to go to another website and actually try to dig out that information. That's the idea, right?
But I can see the argument is still that. This is why the search engine, one reason why the search engine business is so difficult. Because every improvement of the main search interface that people are used to, that's very, very tricky. You don't want to upset or disturb the users in doing so. So we're not saying that this is the next step that you do. Whenever you type Uma Thurman, we display the birthday and age, let's say. But definitely, if you were to just, let's say, rely on tables in Wikipedia, doing so would only cover a very small number of classes, incredibly small number of classes, and that's based on more recent experiments that we're not talking about here, on very recent, sort of failed experiments. I supervised an intern this summer, and that didn't really work, because my assumption was wrong. Wikipedia does not really contain what I wanted to contain in semi-structured. I think it's worth talking about these things, even though it's early during the talk, and these are very relevant issues that we have been dealing with too, and we have to talk, to think about. This takes us to class attribute extraction, in which case we'd like to derive, as I said, a list of attributes for given classes. Usually, when people worked on fact extraction, larger scale fact extraction, they pre-specify the relation of interest in advance. And this is what we didn't like. We never liked this. They would say, they would build some sort of method, they would evaluate it on what? On some relation. They would pick country, capital of city. They say, this is a relevant relation, let's see how we perform on this. And they have some precision numbers. They say, we think that company maker of drug, that's a relevant relation. Let's see how well we can do with this. Let's see how many pairs we can extract accurately of a company making this particular drug. Well, the big question is, why do they pick that relation? How do they know that the maker is the most important thing for the drug, the most important attribute? Maybe some other things, maybe the price is more important or not. The thing is, how could one actually move closer to building a basic knowledge base from scratch, figuring out that there are these various classes, but then if you give me these various classes, I can tell you these are the various attributes, these are the important relations that people actually care about, besides people decide that they arbitrarily should be important, they should be used in evaluations. As I said in the beginning, the data sources for information extraction and for fact extraction, traditionally they have been document collections of some form. News articles, which are cleaner, then people moved away from them. Let's see some more realistic collections, not in the sense that the news articles are not available, but there is the web, which is much noisier. So you could get more data, but at the expense of, well, noisiness. Since we are at Google, could afford thinking beyond that, and we could think about pursuing information extraction without even a document collection. And you can start doing that if you are on the search engine side, and if you see all these queries coming in, all these queries that you have to respond to. These are queries that are submitted by millions of users. You have a very diverse population. So you cannot get much better than that in terms of democracy of information. But these are searches for knowledge, which is what this workshop is about, actually. And the key observation, our intuition was that, it's not rocket science, again, you haven't seen it from me before, as in the previous talk. But obviously, as people submit their queries to a search engine, they somehow must define what they are searching for, even one or two or three or four keywords. Otherwise, they will never get what they want. They know that there are more than 1 billion documents by now. They know that there are more than 1 billion documents that are indexed by a search engine. So in order to get something relevant in the top 10 results or so, well, they will have to provide some sort of keywords, more or less reasonably, depending on how good the users are, how well experienced they are, and so on. One way or another, in order to get information and knowledge, they must provide some knowledge in the form of noisy, underspecified, ambiguous search queries. And that's something that you can actually exploit for information extraction. In particular, for the task of class attribute extraction, which is what this talk is about. So we'll see how we can do some, we create a supervised extraction of class attributes from query logs. In terms of extraction strategies, there is a choice in terms of how the class, the particular class that we want to get attributes for, is specified. It may be specified through the class label, the actual string, car or automobile, let's say, if we want to get attributes for this kind of class. And in that case, one could hope that there is some piece of text somewhere on the web, let's say. Now, we're not talking about queries specifically, okay? So this is some piece of a document, which could say, well, the most important properties for a car are this and this and this and this and this. Lucky if you get that. Even on the web, even given 1 billion documents, you're very lucky to get that. People do not really write that way. There is common sense knowledge, and common sense knowledge is not going to be available explicitly too often. People do use named entities, however, a lot. They use those in queries, they use those in documents. People like to name things in order to communicate with others. So, another way to specify the class would be through the set of instances that would define the class. And we might have a few model names, your favorite ones or some that you may have picked from some resource. This will get you a bit closer. This is more realistic. This has higher chances to give you some matches, regardless of the collection that you use as a data source, whether you use query logs or documents. Because as I said, people use named entities more often. Now, also about extraction strategies, how we would go about finding class attributes. There is the question of annotated data, and there were quite a few talks, even today there were talks about annotated data and supervised techniques and so on. Well, if annotated data is available, then we can talk about supervised extraction. What one would do then would be to go through a bunch of documents and annotate particular class and some attributes that one would want to extract, and then you could train an extractor on that. The disadvantage of this, well, of course, someone has to take the time to annotate the data, and we don't like that. On web scale, we never like that, so search engines sort of shy away from that. You see the trend. Even search engines that started with a lot of manual annotation are moving away from that. If annotated data is not available, then what you can do is write some rules by hand for extracting the information that you want. So in this case, the rule could be, well, we're expecting, let's say, properties of R, and then some noun phrase, R, and then some enumeration. That could be your extraction, of course. This will fail quite often. It's very unlikely to succeed in the first place. But then even when it does, even when this rule does fire, well, it will extract good matches and bad matches as well. And the big problem with handcrafted rules is that it will be very tricky to refine them. You write the first rule and then you apply it, you run it from the collection. You see, well, good results, bad results. In order to eliminate as many of the bad results and keep the good ones, that task will be as hard as it can get. So we opt for weekly supervised extraction, which means that we are going to start from a few seed examples, a few attributes that we'd like to get, and then have the system extract other attributes like those for the class. In other words, as input, we have the target classes specified, as I said, through a representative set of instances rather than the class label. So for the class company, we just pick a bunch of company names. Also, we'll use a small set of seed attributes for each class. This could be 5 attributes that one could use for the class company. Quite easy to provide, just 5. The data source is going to be a set of anonymized search queries from query logs that we have. We don't use any sort of session information. We don't use any sort of click-through data, nothing at all. Only independent, anonymized query streams.
Why don't you use click-through data?
On purpose, because we wanted to see, this is the first time that anyone does this, as far as we know. So we wanted to see how far we can get, and we can get very far, actually. If we have time towards the end, I'll come back to this question. This does better than a bunch of other methods that we tried, the latest of which is the one that I mentioned earlier, the one from using structured data like Wikipedia, that does worse. And we tried 2 more different methods, which also did worse than this. The final output, this is the kind of output that we'd hope for. What's important to note here, we're not going after the values yet. Ideally, you'd want for Toyota, you'd want to have all of this filled in. You'd want to know what the mission statement is, if there is any. You want to know where the headquarters are and so on. We don't do that here. All we're trying to do is get the list of attributes that are relevant for the class company and for other classes such as company. There are 3 steps for doing this. One is to find a large pool of candidate attributes, which is going to be very noisy. They're going to be represented somehow, and I'll show you how quite easily, quite intuitively, I would say. And then they're going to be ranked. So all of this is sort of modeled as a document retrieval, as an item retrieval problem. We have a bunch of them. You simply have to represent them somehow, and then you rank everything, such as hopefully the good items are at the top, like web search. 1 billion items, rank everything. Hopefully the good ones are going to be at the top for your particular query that you have submitted. The first step started from an assumption. This first step, yes.
You said you're going to session information, but you're looking at anonymized query
streams.
Streams. Oh, just the query string. So it's not like
by user
call.
I missed that. It's not. It's not what?
So it's not separated by user at all.
The input data, okay, let me clarify. We used a bunch of query logs that we maintain in Google. And what we actually used as input data here are the query string, pairs of a query string, and the frequency of submission for that particular query. So this happened over some time interval. But it doesn't matter how long, I would say. It doesn't matter. There are going to be variations. People are going to be more interested about iPods earlier this year, and then they're interested in the iPhone, and then people's interests vary. But we would think, or we would hope, that overall we would get a reasonable sample for the class that we care about. Streams. The notion of a stream is irrelevant here. They are simply independent query strings along with their frequency. To identify the candidate attributes, our intuition or assumption was that since we are trained, we as users of search engines are trained to be lazy, then if something is an attribute of a class, then, well, there must be some user in the world who search for the instance of the class and the attribute. For instance, if the capital city is a relevant attribute for country, there must be someone who has typed capital Australia, or capital France, and so on. It's an intuition or an assumption. Again, as I said, based on the fact that we have been trained to be lazy. If we type a lot of, not a lot of keywords, but if we type stop words, if we type the whole question, we're not going to get much further the way that search technology is these days. So typing what is the capital of Australia versus capital of Australia versus capital Australia is probably going to give you about the same results. At least that's what it is. So laziness, we exploit laziness. If this assumption is true, then well, we can get candidate attributes by simply looking at queries containing one of the instances that we have in the input data, and considering everything else in the query as being a candidate attribute. This, of course, is going to give you a very, very noisy set of a pool of candidate attributes. But somewhere in there are going to be you're going to find all the relevant attributes for the class according to the assumption. The next step is to represent this each of these candidate attributes. This can be done in a second pass over the query logs, where now you pick the instance of the class as well as the candidate attribute that you have. Here, installing is the candidate attribute, and Toyota is the instance. You're going to find where each of these appear in query logs, and whenever you have a query that contains both, then you're going to call in the remainder of the query as some sort of a signature. In this example, for instance, you have an empty prefix, an empty infix, and then this postfix. Given that installing is the candidate attribute and Toyota is the instance. For the second query here, Coca-Cola Company 1 year stock price target, that was kind of a longer query that someone submitted. The query remainder, after identifying the instance and the candidate attribute, is going to be this. So all of these query remainders, all of these representations, can be placed into a vector for the given class and for the given attribute. For instance, in the case of stock price, which is one of the candidate attributes and the class for the class company, we're going to have a big vector for which an element is going to be one of these representations, one of these concatenations of a prefix, infix, and postfix. Is that more clear? So we're not doing anything special. We're simply looking for queries containing both a candidate attribute and an instance. We remove them, and then everything else becomes an element in a vector, sort of like a vector space model, except that the elements in the vector are not words. We have sequences of words from the queries.
Why does this vector look like it's so long when there are only three things in the vector, or five things in the vector? The two elements that are being associated, the object and its attribute, and then a prefix, infix, and postfix. Is it three, just the five
this,
things?
All of this is one entry in the vector, these three items.
Three
items
or one entry.
So this thing you can view this as a string, which says empty prefix, company 1 year, 1 year infix, target postfix.
You're saying
all of this is one unique entry in the vector of stock price. If stock price appeared with another query, say what is the stock price of Apple? Then another entry in this vector would be what is the, and then of. So you'd separate the infix and the prefix and the postfix from this new query, and you'd end up with another snapshot of a query of queries that can be asked about this particular attribute for this particular class. That would become another entry in the vector. So all of this is one thing. All of this is one entry in the vector. Does that answer your question?
I've got a suspension of disbelief right now. I'm interested in seeing what happens.
We'll see. We'll see a few more examples. Don't worry about it. But we actually have some example in the next slide, I believe, where you'll see more than one entry in the vector. So it's going to be a bit more clear. But for now, this whole thing is just one element in the vector. It's not three elements. It's just one.
Okay.
Because
and so
it's
each
one.
Each of these three-part units is going
to
be one element.
Right. You put them together, and then they become one element. It's like a big word, let's say, pseudo word. So we'll have vectors associated with each candidate attribute. Many candidate attributes, so many vectors. In order to actually rank all of these and end up with a rank list of attributes out of all these candidates. We are going to merge the vectors associated with the seed attributes. So if you remember, we provide 5 seed attributes for each class manually. If any of those 5 seed attributes appeared among this, within this big pool of candidate attributes, then we're going to just grab those vectors, which are this in this case, stock price and headquarters. So stock price and headquarters, these were the vectors. And these two were seed attributes. I told the system that these should be seed attributes. So we're going to get the vectors for them, and we're going to merge them into a vector that's going to be a search signature vector for this class county. What does this mean? It means that for the class company, given these 5 seed attributes, well, this is the kind of queries that people submit. This is how these two are related. These two meaning the class and the seed attributes. And as an immediate result, that means that we're looking for the candidate attributes that are most similar to this. You know, it's like, as I was saying earlier, this is quite a kind of close to the vector space model. What we're looking for is candidate attributes whose vectors are the most similar to this vector, that is the combined vector for the seed attributes. We have to compute the similarity between vectors, of course, and for that we use a bunch of similarity measures from literature. We use the cosine similarity with Jensen Shannon and a few others, and we'll see in a moment which of them perform better. Yes.
Yeah. So you pick the classes by hand, and you have some list of known exemplars of each class.
Yes, by hand. Yes, the classes are picked by hand. The instances in the classes are picked by hand, and the seed attributes are picked by hand. Mm-hmm. Yes, which is why we've been working on doing this automatically. Yeah. But that's not part of this talk.
So, am I right in thinking that these vectors are very sparse because a vector position corresponds to a particular prefix, infix, postfix triplet?
They are quite sparse, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. The big picture, which I hope is going to clarify everything, including those questions about what exactly are the entries in the vectors. The input consists of target classes, which are sets of instances, and query logs. The first step is to derive the large pool of noisy candidate attributes. That was the first step. So installing, unfortunately, and stock price, which is good, and accord, not so good, headquarters, and so on, these are candidate attributes. There are many of them. Now we have to go about actually representing each of them. This was the second stage, in which we would take each of these items, each of the instances in the class, and we would search for queries containing both. For instance, for the query installing Toyota Cressida water pump, we're going to insert, well, the same example, this particular element here in the vector install for the class content. Now we see another query that says installing Oracle and so on, 817 on Solaris 8. Someone was curious about that. Now we have another element inserted in this vector. It says no prefix, no infix, that is the particular postfix. It's one more element. Two of them. Of course, there are more than them. These are just for illustration. Now for the query Coca-Cola Company 1 year stock price target. We've seen that before. Coca-Cola is one of the instances. Stock price is one of the candidate attributes, so we grab the rest. And we're going to place that as one element in the vector stock price for the company. Same thing for Delta Airlines stock price history. Now we would have no prefix, and then airlines, and then history. This is how the vectors are being filled in that second stage. In other words, this is how the candidate attributes are represented through vectors. And the process continues. We're going to skip that. Is that clear now? Or more or less. Let's keep this. Now in the next stage, we're going to take advantage of the seed attributes that are also provided as input. We have the 5 seed attributes that were given manually for the class company. What we do with them? Well, we're going to find that big reference vector for the class by using stock price, headquarters, and that's about it, because they did appear among the candidate attributes. So we take the vectors, we take all the elements in them, and we're going to simply put them in the result vector. This is a sum. So we take the vector for stock price, we take the vector for headquarters, and we put the elements in the final vector. That's it. What you end up here, what you end up with is, as I said, the reference vector for this class, for these seed attributes. And in the next stage, we're going to compare all these vectors individually with this one, rank them such that the most similar to this are going to be ranked the highest. Hopefully, that's going to give you the best possible list of attributes for this particular class. This is the intuition. This is how it works. It's like waves. Take all the documents, represent them somehow, rank them, show the rank list, hoping that the ones at the top are the best for the given query.
So these triads are features that you're using, to compute some kind of similarity between what?
The similarity is computed between two vectors, between this particular vector and this particular vector. Each of these elements here, this complete element, has some frequency. People have asked, what is the world headquarters for Coca-Cola Corporation? Someone else asked, what is the world headquarters for PepsiCo Corporation, and so on. There's going to be some frequency sequencing here. This is an aligned vocabulary, so this is a finite vocabulary, this is a finite vocabulary. Then we just have two vectors for which we can compute the similarity with cosine and anything else.
Is the presumption here that because your database of queries is so vast that you don't have to worry very much about, whatever strange wording people have used, that for Coca-Cola they'll use, someone else will use the same thing for all other corporations?
We are not making any sort of different assumptions from our assumptions. I don't see how they would be any different from the way documents are represented in the document retrieval. There are words that appear in documents, and they may be used to obtain a vector representation for the document with some frequency. For the weights, one can compute the TF IDA, but it's a bunch of words. No one can guarantee that those particular words really are representative for that particular document. No one. No one can say that that particular weighting scheme is the best one. No one. But we can use it with some results. Same thing here. There is no particular assumption that we're making about queries that would be different, special, as opposed to using documents at all. The same thing could have happened with the document.
But when you lose track that reference vector, you said something that I didn't quite understand about selecting the elements of the vectors from stock price and headquarters. How do you know which ones to select to combine?
They are the ones from the seed attributes. They were provided as input manually.
Oh,
someone said manually that these five are seed attributes, so give me more like them.
Okay, sir.
That's how we select them. Out of that very big pool. Okay. If you are out of luck, none of them will appear here, in which case you can do nothing at all.
Okay.
There is no attribute that you can provide. So, but we haven't, that's actually an interesting. We've done this, as you see, we've done this on 40 classes, we never encountered the problem. It's not like anyone had to go through query logs to actually double check, does this attribute really appear in some query, because otherwise we're out of luck. No, we never encountered that case, but in theory it's possible. Now to evaluation. First, a few words about the data itself, about the query logs. We had 50 million queries, when counting the unique ones. This is the distribution of the queries according to their frequency, according to the length, actually, of the query. The actual curves are not that important. What does matter is that most of these queries are short. Not surprising, everyone was expecting that. But what follows from this is that we're actually using a much smaller number than 50 million queries in our approach. Why? Because the second stage requires queries that contain both an instance and an attribute to appear together in the query. So that's kind of important. We're actually using a relatively small amount of data, I would say, by today's standards, in all kind of evaluations that you can think of, and you can actually find in papers. In other words, whatever results we get are even stronger, I would say, than what we'd otherwise think. As target classes, this is where the pain was. And this is where the pain is in all the information extraction papers that you see that are trying to do something new, that are trying to extract some new type of information. There is no gold standard, of course. So we just went and collected 40 different classes. We did so trying to be as diverse as possible, trying to cover many different domains. There is food, there are products, there are cartoon characters, electronic equipment items, there are locations, currencies, and so on. So again, we did this trying to be as diverse as possible. And in doing so, we didn't really have a rule or anything. So we ended up with classes that had different sizes in terms of numbers of instances in each class. The actor is kind of big because it's relatively easy to get a list of actors. But then we only had 50 cartoon characters, not necessarily because there are only 50 cartoon characters in the world. That's what we collected. We didn't have much time. This was an evaluation. But we did have 40 classes. Of course, this was incremental. At the beginning, we had 5, then we added 5 more, and so on. And we ended with 40. For each of these 40 classes, then, we provided 5 seed attributes. For instance, for search engine, this is what we picked. And it's not like we thought about this a lot. It's not like a 2-second decision. Okay, for search engine, quality, speed, number of users, market share, reliability are relatively good seed attributes. You might agree, might not agree. It doesn't really matter as long as no one is really surprised by seeing those. These are the 5 similarity functions that I mentioned we were using. Besides cosine, we picked a few other similarity functions that are mostly used in natural language literature in comparing papers. And for evaluation, again, pain. No gold standard means manual evaluation. So we picked the attributes extracted by the system. We took the top 50 for each class. We ranked them alphabetically, and then we manually annotated. As being vital or okay or not. These were the different possible labels assigned to each attribute extracted by the system. And these are some examples with that probably, you probably agree with this, that precedent and cost are vital attributes for the classes country and drive respectively, whereas diary and users are not good attributes to get for painter and drive respectively. In doing the evaluation, we tried to be on the conservative side. When we were in doubt, we'd rather say no. Let's penalize the system. Once we assigned these labels, we had scores associated to each label, and this is how we could compute precision scores for the lists of attributes that the system extracted. So now we can compute the precision at 10, at 50, and so on, because we have all the labels assigned to each attribute, and we have a score for each of those labels. First, we looked at the difference between the similarity functions. We had 5. So the first question was, which of them is the best? Well, the first thing to see is that the performance varies quite a bit across classes, and no function is really best on all classes. Here you can see that Jensen, Shannon, and L1 norm performed the best. Here things differ again. But overall, over the 40 classes, Jensen Shan turned out to be the best. This these are the top attributes starting with Jensen Shan. So this is a look at the raw hard data that the system actually extracted. Given instances for the classes, and given the five seed attributes. We collect this for actor, this for aircraft model, and so on. One thing to note is that there is no attempt to do to detect near synonyms for semantically equivalent attributes. For instance, nutritional information, nutrition facts, and nutritional value and nutrition, most people would judge this to be sort of equivalent, or if not equivalent, very close to each other. The system does not attempt to detect this, so this would all get full credit if we decide that these are relevant for the system. Any questions about this? Or remarks? These are the attributes for some other classes towards the end. Another thing to note is this graduation 2005. This is not something that I like. the least reason for that being that it's temporally anchored. And there is no reason to think that the graduation 2005 was more important than the one in 2006 or 2000. We haven't done anything special to it. It would have been easy to, let's say, remove the attributes containing years, containing four-digit numbers that start with one, and so on. But we haven't done that. We're really trying to push this as much as we can and see how much we can get out of it without any sort of special processing.
In the same alumni and mascot, but why economics and psychology?
What's that, sorry?
You have economics and psychology, so it seems sort of quirky.
As to in what sense?
Well, not math, I mean.
Yeah.
two departments, right?
Yeah.
Since you asked about this, I'm not very. I wouldn't really want this to be at the top. If I were to prepare an ideal list of attributes for the class university, I would not put types of departments at my top. But that's objective. I don't know about other people if they do the same.
The dean instead of the faculty.
Well, the mascot is the right thing. It comes ahead of the dean.
Yes.
At least at Yale. That
then we did some comparison. Since now we have precision scores, we can compare to what has happened before. And there was one previous approach, class attribute extraction, which actually we did as well. But that was based on patterns. So that takes us back to the original discussion about possible strategies for extraction. When I was saying that one possible strategy would be to write handwritten rules to extract attributes. That's what we did in the first place. By basically looking for X of Y patterns, which is kind of obvious. So you take the query logs, you look for X of Y patterns where Y is your instance. So something of France, that could be capital of France. Something of Google, that could be shares of Google. So it is similar in the sense that there is no annotated data. It is similar in the sense that the target classes are again specified in a set of instances, also using query logs, but using handcrafted extraction patterns. So there is more supervision. This is what happens on three different classes. If we are to look at the best and worst similarity function of our new method, this would be the old method, the blue one. Again, things vary across classes. These are the actual precision numbers when we're looking at rank, at the list of attributes at rank 10, 20, and 50. This is the old method. Handcrafted, and this is the new method using seed attributes. And the new method is just better. It just beats the old method, and it beats three different methods that we've tried within the past year or so. Whether using documents or queries. Yes.
Those are ratings of the quality of the attributes extracted.
Yes. These are scores at various ranks based on those manual labels: vital, or okay, or wrong. Vital getting 1.0. So one is the best, of course. That means everything was vital. Everything was judged vital within the top 10 attributes for this class. And so on. Right. So this would be the comparison of precision scores has an average over 40 classes for the two methods. You can see the difference. And it's quite big. This means a lot, almost 0.2 at 10. And then even more at rank 50. Any questions, Don?
How often did you find that you extracted two or more attributes that really were the same thing, like stock price and share price, for example?
That's a hard question. You notice that, so it's something that you notice that enough that it's something that you'd want to address sooner or later. How often it depends with the class. One thing that we've done to sort of not to tackle that issue and not to get around it, but to improve the diversity of the results, was to remove attributes that had the same head as an attribute that's already shown. So if you had
economy and fuel economy, same head, did you say?
I was thinking about, this actually came in, the example was with maps, and the actual motivator for this was that we saw a lot of map types with cities and countries. But you see that for various other attributes, yes. For cities, you'd have city map, you'd have traffic map, and so on. And all of them would be considered correct. And if we were to leave them in there, it would boost the precision score even higher. But we thought not only that this would be unfair, but who's going to like that sort of list anyway? We don't. So other people won't. Yeah. So we removed these other attributes that had the same head, just to improve the diversity, although that may lower the score, of course. But this is just the tip of the iceberg, of course. It's not going to handle things like nutritional information and nutrition facts, which are kind of the same thing, but they are not basically equivalent, and their heads are not the same. So they could not be removed from this. The next last step that we tried, and this is in practice, this is kind of the most important one, given the method, was to see if we can minimize the amount of supervision even further. Right now, we need a list of instances in the class, and we need those five seed attributes for each class. What if we try to reduce that? We can reduce the number of seed attributes from five to lower, and we can also reduce the number of instances per class from the default, which is all, 1,500 for the class actors, 50 for the class cartoon character, too few. This is what happens if you do that. This is what happens if you reduce the number of seats per class. And this is what happens if you reduce the number of instances per class artificially. This is important. And we thought that the reduction in precision is not really ugly, meaning that this is hopeful. Meaning that with only a small amount of input effort, collecting 20 instances for a new class, and then providing, let's say, 3 seats for the new class, that doesn't take that long. It doesn't take as long as providing 1,500 instances, obviously. You might get some new attributes for a new class with this amount of effort. That's, again, the tip of the iceberg. Even after this, we were not happy. This was happening at the end of last year. So our more recent work is in the area of collecting class instances automatically from text, from scratch. And we had some progress on that, but it's a completely different talk. It kind of takes us to the conclusion, this remark, this current work. We have done less in the area of diversifying this towards other languages. We're thinking about trying something for French, but we're waiting for getting some go-ahead on that. This took about 80% of my time in the recent past. I had very surprising findings on that. Kind of made me think about the state of the art in natural language processing and in the field. We've had the work in embed recognition going on for decades now. and we had precision results of 90% and more. So one would think that, yeah, there must be a resource that I can get giving me 500 different classes, each of them having, let's say, 200 different instances that are very accurate. You'd expect that, but it's not the case. So we're trying to do that on our own. We tried a bunch of things. We looked at previous literature. We looked at the result of the last year's paper at ACL. Not good enough.
It seems that you're sort of tying yourself and hanging behind your back. And then if you were to use a quick through, see what people do with the queries, you will actually have much more useful information about to get them organized.
In order to improve precision?
Yeah. Because you see what people mean.
Yeah.
Like, right, they have a query. You want to know what that query really relates to and what the attributes of the query is. The statistics only follow through on the query.
We might get high precision, I think, but the precision is already quite high for this particular set. What we have noticed is as we move away from 40 classes that we pick manually, as we move away to 100, 400, 4,000, things start to get very interesting. The precision drops. Because, of course, these new classes are acquired automatically. So now we have a bunch of instances collected from nowhere, from unstructured text. And they're not 100% precise. So the precision degrades. But this particular work we thought was quite interesting. And no one really does that right now. It's a billion, it's kind of an unexpected research result.
What does the third point here mean?
Oh, yeah. I should explain it. This. Otherwise, it's hard to parse. Yeah. Here we're looking at. I don't think that we'll be able to do this within the next 2 years or even longer. We're thinking about attributes that are not very likely to be found in text as they are. Attributes that are more semantic. Things like. Let me think of a good example. For countries, for instance, you might have some sort of statistics regarding the degree of education for various age groups within the population of the country. Listing that attribute, you might list the attributes manually. You might say variation of variation within different age groups for the degree of education. If you wanted that as an attribute, that's what I meant here. That would be kind of hard to extract from text because it's unlikely that it will appear. Another thing that I'm referring to, this is one thing, another thing that's even more important, is that attributes such as capital city for a country and so on, they have relatively simple values that can be extracted. The capital of the city is a city. That's much simpler to extract than, let's say, the mission statement of a company. Why? Because the mission statement of a company is not composed of, it's not a proper name. And it's longer. How longer? You don't know. One sentence, four sentences, one paragraph, one page, you don't know. So generally here, we are referring to values of attributes that span over much longer than a small phrase. Like a capital city or a number. What's the number of employees at Google? Some number. What's the mission statement of Google? Well, that's a bit longer, it's a bit wordier. What's the strategy of Google? That's a good attribute, strategy perhaps for a company. Getting the value for that, which is not that important in this work, but getting the value for that in the future is going to be more challenging than getting the value for capital city of a company. So this is what we are. Again, it relates to name recognition. And to the fact that name recognition, the working name recognition, even though it's spanned a few decades by now, has been focused on these five, for a long time, on these five big classes, person, location, organization, and so on, and not much further. Which takes us today to this state that we don't have a list of instances for 400 classes. That's not acceptable, I think, after this much effort and money that has been poured into research. But we're going to get there. want it or not. Value extraction is something that we might look at. We have been postponing this. We might do it. But with, right now we're working a bit more in this area, getting sets of classes to this automatically from text and labeling them as well. So figuring out that France, Germany, Italy have something in common, but also figuring out what the label for that is country for us.